There.
Okay, that's it for now. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, please feel free to go ahead and get started with the meeting. Thank you for your patience. James?
I think he's on mute.
Yeah, it auto-muted me for some reason. All right, sorry about that, everybody. How's everybody doing today?
Great.
Awesome. All right, so I'm gonna start off with something real quick, just to remind everybody, last year we voted to give all of the NIAs that were coming out of their SORT grant $500 out of our budget. And so I just wanted to remind everyone that there is still money there for North Topeka West, I believe. Quinton Heights Steel is now eligible, as well as Tennessee Town. So North Topeka West and Tennessee Town, you're going to have a conversation with Latoya about how to get your $500. And so that we can celebrate the SORT grant completion projects and get the city involved a little bit more. So, if you are muted and you need to ask a question, please know that if you hit star 6, it will unmute you. So if you have something that you need to ask someone, press star 6. All right. And with that, we're going to speak with Corey Wright from the Housing Services Division.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Today, I want to talk to you guys all about the two things, actually, the 5-year consolidated action plan, so 2021 to 2025. And then after we have some conversation and get your input on that particular plan, I also want to talk to you about the 2019 substantial amendment to the CON plan, which includes the new CV funds that we have recently received to help prevent, prepare for, and respond to the coronavirus. So we'll get started. I have put together a short presentation. I don't want to assume that you guys don't know these programs already, but I also know there might be a few new people on the committee. So I did put a few slides together, and I will be happy to share this. Actually, I've already shared this with the Community Engagement Division, who will happily probably send it out after this conversation. And then if you have questions or hints after you've thought through, sometimes people are process people, after you've thought through this and maybe have something after this call, you can send me your thoughts and we can add them to the plan and take them into consideration. So the 5-year plan is kind of a big deal, and it coincides with our housing study. As you know, you had that presentation a week or two ago. And so we are excited about the opportunity to see how we can expand services, make some changes, do some good stuff, and move on for the next 5 years with all the uncertainty that we're having right now. So HUD objectives. So these are probably familiar to most of you: suitable living environment, availability and accessibility, decent affordable housing, affordability, creating economic opportunities, sustainability, of course, neighborhood relations. Our objectives in relation to the HUD objectives are enhancing the quality of the neighborhoods, increasing home ownership, enhancing our housing with support services, which we do with many of our funding sources that are specific to that. And then, of course, leveraging other resources. So that's really important. And that actually came out a lot in the housing study. So we're going to try to increase our availability to do that during the next 5 years. So I do want to talk briefly about what grant funds are included in this for 2021. So basically, these estimates are based off of the 2020 amounts that we've received. And so these are not exclusive grants that we receive. We receive many grants that are somewhat smaller, you know, a few here and there, but these are the major grants that we receive that bring in a lot of money into the community. So you will see the CDBG 1.8, home 552,000, ESG 155, 1.7 shelter plus care. That has dropped over the last couple of years, and we are working hard to try to make that application better. It's a competitive grant, so it's not an entitlement, so we have to really do a lot of work to receive that grant, in addition to the planning grant, which is 56,000. And then the federal home loan bank grant is 750,000. So that's a grant that we're using for property maintenance rehab, which we'll talk about here momentarily, but that's a grant that is competitive also. It's a regional grant, it's highly competitive, and we are going to continue to apply for that to bring in more rehab into the community, especially for our low-income homeowners who may not have the availability to repair their homes when they receive property maintenance violations. So that's a pretty important one as well. So briefly, this is a very comprehensive slide, has a lot of information on it. And again, we will share this PowerPoint with you and all the neighborhood leaders actually. But these are our program, basic programs information. So this is our SORT target area rehabilitation. So you guys are very familiar with the SORT target area program. So basically yes.
Because you're the host now, can you double check and make sure we don't have any others in the waiting room that are waiting to be let in?
Yes. Oh, we have a few more.
Okay. I'm sorry, because I can't see them, so I can't let them in.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't notice that on the top of the screen. Okay. Thank you guys for joining us, and I'm sorry I didn't get you in a little sooner. Yellow.
Got it? Mm-hmm. Do I need to repeat the information about the Star 6, or will you, Corey?
I'm sorry?
The Star 6 to unmute if they're on the phone.
Sure, yes. If you need to unmute yourself, if you could hit Star 6, and then you'll be able to speak at any time during the presentation. So again, I'll just briefly cover this slide. These are the amounts that we receive typically through the grant year for our major grants. We have many smaller grants from all of our divisions within neighborhood relations. And so, but these are the ones that bring in some significant dollars and we need to account for in our con plan. So target area rehabilitation is our owner occupant and rental occupant programs. So they're very specific. $30,000 is the max for repairs for our target area owner occupied properties. So we can do things on the inside of the house and on the outside of the house. You can see all the guidelines there, which we'll email you. And then the rental occupants is four rental properties. It's $15,000 max for repairs. The landlord does have to have a little buy-in. It's $1,500 if they max out at $15,000. And then there's a forgiveness for each of these programs, 50% after 7 years for owner-occupant, and then 60% after 7 years for the rental occupancy. These two programs are our target area rehabilitation. With this, which is not on this slide, is our infill. So we don't specifically do infill in-house anymore in our department, but when the SORT target area neighborhood committee is picking their where they want their funds to be spent in the target area, they can choose, I want so much to go to owner occupants, I want so much to go to rental occupants, and then we wanna partner with one of our CHOTOs, which is our community housing development organizations, Cornerstone and Habitat, to see if they can build something. We'll put so much money aside to build something in these target areas. And that has been extremely successful in the past 3 years, where we have been able to do some infill with them with some of the target area SORT funding. So that's pretty exciting stuff. Another program, very popular. We receive numerous calls constantly on this program, and we expend all the funds every year. Every year I've been with the city for the last 15 years. So this is an emergency repair. So it's exactly what it sounds like. It's immediate health and safety. So these are repairs that without this assistance, this homeowner would not be able to live in their home in a safe manner. And so we have a minimum of 300, maximum of 15,000 for the work for this program. First 1500 is a grant with no repayment. And then after that, it goes a soft mortgage on the property where they don't repay that mortgage until they sell or refinance the property. And then again, we have another occupant joining us. So I'm gonna let them in real quick. I believe. I think. Another one? No, I thought I saw another one first.
No.
No, okay. Okay, guess not. So after 7 years, this mortgage, if they're the homeowner remains in the home, 50% is forgiven. And then the rest is put on a permanent lien on the property again until they sell or refinance the property. Frequent items that we see for this, which you can only imagine how hard that would be to pay for when you're on a low income budget, sewer lines, water heater, furnace, electrical, lead paint issues, roof. We do air conditioning with this program if it's medically necessary. So it's a very popular program. Another program, this is true to my heart. My dad was a very disabled person, and you can't hardly live in your house if you don't have accommodations when you need them. So this program is also for owner-occupied and rentals. So with owner-occupied, it's a maximum of $6,000 for the exterior. So that would be a ramp and possible door widening on the exterior. And then $4,500 for interior. And then we do mobile homes. We do only $1,500 for mobile homes. Household incomes obviously can't exceed 80%. It's a one-time grant, so there's no mortgage on this particular one. We just allow this as a grant. And then again, this program is to allow for one visitable access into the home, into the bathroom and bedroom. Many times it's fixtures, grab bars, high-rise toilet. On rental properties, we only do exterior, and that is a $4,000 limit, and that's typically just a ramp at $4,000. Oh, I guess I could have done the slideshow. There we go. So voluntary demolitions, another program. We have not a lot of money in this program, but it's become very useful. We have a lot of property owners that have properties that are in complete disrepair and don't have the means to demolish the property. And so you can see this is a very detailed, and the way you reuse the property is how you pay that back. But this is pretty important to get those structures down in neighborhoods that have these kinds of properties in them. The TOTO program, which is our Topeka Opportunity to Own, is our home ownership program. We do up to $30,000 depending on the neighborhood where they're purchasing a house. After 7 years, 50% is forgiven, and the rest is a lien placed on the house. And again, when it's sold, it's repayable. Home buyers go through housing and credit counseling with HTCI. The home can't be over $75,000. So these are homes that are in our LMI areas, and we are trying to get them to buy the home at $75,000 and then let us put another $30,000 in to bring that property value up and increase the value of the homes around our LMI area. So household incomes, again, can't exceed 80% of the median income. So our TROTOs, I referred to that just slightly before. Cornerstone and Habitat for Humanity are our TROTOs, and we have done quite a bit of work within the past few years. Our neighborhood improvement associations that have been selected for sort really collaborated with them to make some great partnerships. And I can give you more details about this if you want to shoot me an email about what we've done and where we've done them. You can see on the next few slides some pictures of some projects that we've done with our two chotos. 15% of our home funds have to be set aside for our chotos. Excuse me. On top of that, again, this is where the SORT program, if the neighborhood chooses to allocate some of their major rehab rental rehab funds to infill projects, then we can move those funds over and do an infill project with one of our chotos, and it's been quite successful in a lot of neighborhoods. So here's some, just a few slides of chotos we've done over the past few years. I will say that most of the homes, not maybe not that one in particular, but this one, we try to make ADA accessible. Not, it doesn't always work out with the terrain of the land and building codes for the particular neighborhood, and but we do make every effort to make them accessible. We also have, as you know, neighborhood supports. So we have NAA support funds, which you're familiar with, that supports your newsletters, your activities, your get-togethers in the neighborhood, all that great stuff that you do. And then the neighborhood beautification and blight eradication. I don't think that's spelled right, but I apologize. And then those are inmate crews, critical for our community. They do amazing things in our community, and it's the amount that they put in our community is well over the amount that we're spending for those services. We also have our empowerment activities, and you're familiar with what those activities are: graffiti removal, banners, sidewalks, all kinds of things that the neighborhoods come up with for that. We have Emergency Solutions Grant. This grant is very specific. There's really only four activities that you can fund with Emergency Solutions Grant, and our continuum of care kind of leads where these dollars go in the community, and then it goes to council. Rapid rehousing, which is for people who are already homeless. So we do deposit, first month's rent. Emergency shelter, that's for operations for the emergency shelter. Typically has been just the Center for Safety and Empowerment, since the rescue mission has not historically taken HUD funds or federal funds. And then homeless prevention. So that is people that have gotten an eviction notice, and then we are paying historically just 1 month's back rent to get them back on their feet. And then our homeless management information system. So that is our database that we use to collect and allow for agencies to see who's received rent assistance recently, and are they abusing the system, and can we pull out a report to see how many people we've benefited. So there's a various, it's also required by HUD, but there's various ways to use that system. And the city is now managing that system and improving it on a daily basis. So those are the four main categories for Emergency Solutions Grant. Shelter Plus Care, this is a competitive grant, so it's not an entitlement grant. We receive about $1.8 million for Shelter Plus Care. It houses about 240 households, which totals by the end of the year about 530 people that we've served throughout the year. This is a rent subsidy program. Almost everybody on this program would be cost burdened without the subsidy. Actually, everybody on the program would be cost burdened. So we base their rent off of 30% of their monthly adjusted gross income. So you can do the math on that. So if their income is, you know, $700, 30% of that is what they pay for rent, and then the city pays the rest under this Shelter Plus Care program. So it's a very specific program, not a lot of flexibility on using the money in any different way. You can see those agencies that we partner with are the ones providing case management to help these people move into more sustainable and more self-sufficiency situation. So really, years ago, we received Federal Home Loan Bank grant. You saw an earlier slide. We received about $750,000. And we can do up to a maximum of $20,000 on repairs on a home that has a property maintenance violation. So this is pretty exciting because in the past, we've had people receive property maintenance violations, and it's been super frustrating as staff in our department to know that the people really want to fix their property, they just don't have the means to do it. And a lot of time it's elderly, and then just, or just people that are extremely low income that just don't have the capacity to do it. So this has been exciting. This is a competitive grant that we will continue to try to get in our department for a duration. This is just showing federal levels over time. We've kind of dropped a little bit. And so that's just kind of outlining where we are with each of these programs and giving you some guidance there. So this time, I know that was a lot and I probably talked too fast, so I apologize. But this is an opportunity, especially because it's our 5-year plan, for you guys to provide input. Most of you are familiar with all these programs. Some of you maybe not, but I would like to know, what do you think our funding priorities should be for the next 5 years? And then what changes you would like to see in place during these years? So I am writing notes, so feel free. What was it, James? *6 or something? Yeah, *6. Okay, to unmute.
I have a question for you, Corey.
Yes.
How long do we have to think about these? Because I know typically when we've done it, you came and talked to us about it, and then we kind of turn something in at the next meeting. Yeah. So, you know, how long do we have to be able to give you these questions?
Yes. So a great question, James. And I knew it was going to be a little awkward on Zoom. LaToya did a great job last year, where we broke out into groups and we really had some great conversations, which is much harder to do on Zoom. And so I am very open to you guys taking the presentation, looking it over, pondering over questions, sending me questions. I got a great question from Susan. Lots of questions actually from Susan. So thank you, Susan. About this con plan and what she thought. And I'm more than happy for you to take the presentation that can be emailed to you tomorrow. And then you have literally 30 days for this part. So this 5-year con plan, we're looking at about 30 days to provide comments. So the sooner the better. I think it makes it easier for us to really strategize. But so this doesn't have to be immediate. If you want to provide feedback at a later time, that would be fine. My email will be on the end of the next presentation about the 2019 amendment.
Corey, Courtney from Chosey Park. I know I've got a few people in my neighborhood who would need the help with the fixing up the property for code violations.
Yes.
How do they go about applying for that?
So the best way right now, and we are still taking applications for that program. It's getting, we have a small waiting list, but the court knows that we have a waiting list. And so they're being very flexible with those property owners that have the violations. But their best bet is to call our main office at 368-3711 and then ask for Shane, who does our applications in the department, and then he can send them out an application.
And will your office also be handling permits, or is that another one? I'm sorry.
Permits is handled in another department. LaToya, Monique, is that planning?
That's development services. I'll look the number up and then provide it before the end of the call.
No worries. Thank you, Monique.
Sure.
Corey, one of the things that I noticed on here that I didn't catch in your presentation, and maybe it just didn't catch my ear or whatever, but I know you talked about SORT, but is the city not doing the empowerment grant anymore? Like, is that the county's taking that over, or is that not a thing anymore? What's going on with that, or did I just not hear something?
No, that's a great question, James. I think that there's discussions, like we're receiving discussions and comments from people all over the community, not just from neighborhood leaders. And there has been some discussions to increase some weatherization based off of the findings from the housing study. And so that's been some conversation, and maybe some conversations about revamping empowerment. A lot of people are looking at the enhancement program, and can we make that eligible activities and kind of re-put that into our neighborhood. So there's been a lot of discussion about that, and those are the things that we want to hear back from you. I believe community engagement will have some further conversations after this call. Monique Latoya, chime in if you want. But yeah, we want to hear those thoughts. And so those are conversations that are happening now.
Sure. So James, what I can share with you and share with the group is that I've been given the directive to just have a discussion with the CAC in regards to revamping the empowerment grant. The dollar amount will be much less. We've created a special meeting that I'll share at the end of Corey's presentation with you that will be next week, that will devote 2 hours to it. We will provide you with some potential new programming that we're waiting to have vetted to ensure that it will be approved by HUD. One of those programs is called Love Topeka, and it could be equated to the old enhancement program, and there are a couple others as well. So we are going to dedicate a special meeting to have those discussions. Latoya and I have put a lot of work into thinking of new programming that would be eligible for HUD, that would provide the neighborhoods an opportunity for community building. So I will provide more details at the end of Corey's presentation.
Corey, this is Margo. I have a question. I was curious, is it possible that you can provide, you know, or the department provide performance measures for existing programs?
You bet. We can do that. We'll send out the PowerPoint along with the 2020 budget, which is how we base off of kind of what we put into the 2021 plan. We make modifications. We obviously might have some changes, but I'll put that in there, and then I'll also put in our performance measures.
Thank you, Corey.
You bet.
Corey, I also noticed there's a couple of questions coming in, looks like from the chat.
Okay.
One from Donna Ray. It says, how does budget support the housing study? Can you explain that?
Yeah, so the plan is not complete. We always ask for input, and then we finish the plan. And so the programs that I mentioned today are existing programs. They're not exclusive, and it doesn't mean that we can't add the great programs that community engagement are thinking of, the weatherization program that many of the Affordable Housing Task Force people are considering. So again, this is all information gathering. And then we finish the document based off of that input, and put it out for public comment to get final say. We have a public hearing. It goes to council, of course, and we go from there. Latoya, were there other questions on chat? I'm not very good at Zoom.
I don't see any others, just that one.
Okay. Anything else before we move on to the CARES Act? Okay.
Are you going to have some time at the end for a little bit more Q&A? Because I don't want to derail this, but I do have a few more questions for you.
No, we can pause right here, James, if you want to ask some more questions. And might as well do it in this timing.
Yeah. So the weatherization stuff, is that new or is that a continuing program?
The weatherization is a new initiative, and that was based off of the recommendation from the housing study saying that we needed more of that. So one of the things from the housing study that said that 30% of the housing and housing people in Topeka are housing cost burden, which means they're paying more than 30% of their income towards housing cost, which is pretty significant. Additionally, of that 30%, 50%, 57% of those people that are housing cost burden are minorities. And so another thing that we need to address with our HUD funds. And so the weatherization is one way to provide or reduce housing cost burden for those families. And so that's why it was put into the housing study. And so while I don't think we'll have a robust weatherization program due to funding, the funding that we won't have probably an increase in, I think it's something that we can start with. One of the things that I've been trying to work with is trying to get some people to match. So if we put in $70,000 of our HUD funds with weatherization, who in the community will match that so we can affect more households with the money that we're putting in? They can match it with another $70,000. We can reach more households. So that's kind of a new thing too. And that also came from the housing study, like leveraging dollars and trying to get community partners, not just the city, to buy in that we need to help our neighborhoods.
To piggyback on that question, and thank you for asking that, or answering that. So my understanding through these last couple of years, and it's kind of been, I wouldn't say pushed to us, but made sure that we know that it's of great importance that some of these HUD funds have inclusiveness with some of the citizens, whether it be the CAC or the NIAs. And that's why things like SORT and empowerment were so, so well received for so long, because, you know, it's the NIAs putting them together. It's a CAC voting on it, or it's the empowerment grant, you know, group that they put together that votes on that, you know, kind of does the citizenry aspect of it. So with the weatherization program, would there be a similar ability for neighborhood leaders or just people in general who care about the community to be involved in that?
Yeah, James. So the weatherization would be very similar to how like our emergency repair program works, our accessibility program works, where anybody in the community, no matter where you live, if you are low income, you could apply for that. So any neighborhood leader, anybody in any neighborhood could apply for the weatherization program. It's not specific to a target area.
I wasn't asking about who could apply for it. I was asking more about, like, are the citizens going to be involved in who gets it? You know, for instance, say somebody down the street, you know, for me in my neighborhood applies for it, and I go, man, those are great people. They need a help. You know, they need some help, you know, whatever. But somebody else in another neighborhood, somebody applies for it, and they're like, hey, listen, that's a terrible idea. There's, you know, constant, you know, either it's a meth house or there's constant domestic abuse there or whatever. Like, where does that input come from the citizens on who really needs the help and who's taking advantage of it, I guess is more my question.
Yeah, so that's a good question for all of our programs, actually, and a very difficult question. HUD regulations limit our ability to just select who we feel is a good candidate and who is not a good candidate. So we would have to put together a nice policy on who's eligible for that particular program, but we would not be able to hand select who is eligible for that particular program.
I've got a few more from the chat, Corey, it looks like. Donna Ray is asking, has any thought been given to alternative housing strategies such as housing smaller than 1,000, I don't know if that's square feet, to increase affordability? Possibly have to be accomplished through zoning and incentives.
Housing smaller than, what was the footage? Or do you not able to see
it? Assuming it's 1,000 square feet, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, so I've had many conversations with building code. That's really a building code situation, and a lot of changes to policies and building codes. That's an ongoing conversation at this point. Building code hasn't changed, and so we wouldn't be able to do that. But again, we're constantly looking at that and revisiting that.
Okay, and then it looks like Margo asked a question about, and I'm not sure which service we're talking about, but is Community Action no longer providing a service in reference to a question that James had asked earlier?
LaToya, that would be weatherization.
Okay. Yes. The weatherization program. Is
Margo, absolutely. Community Action does a great job with weatherization. They consistently have people waiting for that program, which is why there's a dire need to have more. It's not that we're duplicating, well, we are kind of duplicating the program, but there's a need, there's a demand for it. And so we are just trying to enhance the weatherization efforts in the city.
And then we have another from Donna Ray. Are there any other support possible for landlords? The trend for younger people is not to purchase, but to rent.
I think a lot of, there's more support. What CDBG is somewhat limited in that regards, but our ESG funds are for most of our activities are for renters. And so while people can have maybe income shortfall, those ESG funds could really be used for landlords. We do have the rental rehab program in our SOAR area, and we do a little rentals with our accessibility program, but that's about it that we're doing currently.
Okay, and the last one that I'm seeing in the chat is from Susan. It says, can we work toward ensuring that those that have been approved for the LEAP program will automatically be eligible for weatherization unless they choose to opt out?
That is a great question, Susan. I will look into that and then report back to community engagement if we can make that part of the policy that we create for that particular program, which hasn't been developed because we don't know if we're doing it quite yet.
Another question. Let's see, for Margo, would it be possible for Corey to provide us with a listing of allowable activities?
Oh, goodness. What I can do is send you the regulation. There's a whole slew of activities that the city can do, including property maintenance activities that we haven't done in the past. But I'll send out the regulation, and if anybody has any questions, they can shoot me an email and I'll be happy to try to answer.
That's all that I see so far in the chat. So I don't know if anybody else has any other questions.
All right, well, great conversation. I have performance measures to send, budget, this presentation, and then I will send CDBG regulation so far, plus whatever we cover during the next section. So James, are you good with us continuing? All right, awesome. Okay, so we have recently received some CARES Act funding. So HUD priority is activities must prevent, prepare for, or respond to COVID-19. With this funds, we are required to do a substantial amendment to our 2019 consolidated action plan because as you know, our 2020 funds have not been allocated, which means they have not approved that plan because you can't submit it until those allocations. So they've asked us to amend our 2019 annual action plan. So with this, we are receiving CDBG CV funds of $1.1 million and then ESG CV funds for $1.4 million. So I'm going to go over some eligible activities. Margo, these are more specific. And so we can talk about what the plan is for those. Okay, so CDBG CV eligible activities. One of the activities is acquisition, construction, rehabilitation, or reconstruction. So these are all related to a testing and diagnosis or treatment facility. So constructing a facility, rehabilitating a facility for patients, and acquiring or rehabilitating a building to accommodate patients all affected by COVID. So these are very specific activities related to diagnosis, testing, and treatment of those activities. Another eligible activity is assistance to businesses, providing grants to support new businesses or business expansions to create jobs. Another one, providing short-term working capital assistance to small businesses to enable retention held by low-income persons. And so these are businesses, as you know, many businesses currently, we have seen many businesses close here recently. With this assistance for that particular line, and we might be able to get them back open and reestablished. Again, providing technical assistance, grants, loans to establish, stabilize, and expand micro enterprises to support home health and quarantine. Another eligible activity is new or quantifiable increase in public services to carry out COVID activities. So these include carrying out job training to expand the pool of healthcare workers and technical assistance to treat the disease, providing testing, diagnosis, or other services at fixed or mobile locations, providing equipment, supplies, materials necessary to carry out public services related to COVID, and then delivering meals to quarantined individuals. ESG, very different. So the criteria for these two are almost completely opposite. The CDBG funds are really pertain to patients, COVID patients, and almost all the activities are related to a COVID patient with CDBG. ESG is, as no surprise, is related to homelessness. So the four categories that ESG is, which I alluded to in the prior presentation, was rapid rehousing, which again is people that are homeless, getting them into housing, homeless prevention, shelter operations, and then our homeless management information system. So I will say with this, I'll just go to this next slide. Proposed plan. Grantees were told to coordinate with local health authorities and businesses before deciding what activities to undertake to support the pandemic response. So since the notification of the second round of ESG funds, which recently came out, probably, I want to say, maybe last week, we have been diligently working with local health authorities, our emergency management crew, Shawnee County Health Department, Topeka Rescue Mission, the Center for Safety and Empowerment, to try to see what the needs are related to what's happening in our community. So proposed plan to date. So this is by no means solid. This is just something that's being considered at this point. We will have to move quickly on this. And so if your input on this after this call, I would like you to send it rather quickly, not 30 days like the five-year con plan. HUD has said that we only need five-day comment period on this, because they want us to quickly get this money out to the community, because as you know, evictions are happening and this money can help with all that. Businesses are closing, this money can help with all that. And so there's a big push for us to submit our substantial amendment to the 2019 plan rather quickly. So CDBG CV funds, the mobile testing unit is some funds available to support Shawnee County's mobile unit to increase testing in underserved areas in Topeka. So with some increase in fundings, they'll be able to do more testing, which is great. Also, they have, which isn't on here, but they also have a need to find a spot for where they're going to do testing in the winter. Right now, they're in a tent for their mobile testing unit. And so those are things that can be paid for with CDBG CV funds. After that, we have some small business grants. So a lot of small businesses have received some funds in the community from other avenues, SBA, some different federal grants that have been available. And not all of them. We have been partnering with the Greater Topeka Partnership. They have said that there's numerous businesses that did not get any of those funds and that are really struggling. So some money at this point is looking to be set aside to support small businesses, to employers that have 51% of their employees that are at low to moderate income. So again, we're working with our low to moderate income folks. ESG, again, remember this is very specific, rapid rehousing, homeless prevention, shelter, and HMIS. And so rapid rehousing, homeless prevention is obvious. We have a clear need, and the input that we've received so far has been 100% supporting that we need to do some rental arrears and rent going forward for people who have lost their jobs. So that seems pretty obvious. Shelter operations, and I'm excited to announce just recently, it's not solidified, so you guys are one of the first to know that we are considering providing operation expenses to the YWCA for their Center for Safety and Empowerment, the building that they have up for their shelter. Does not allow for social distancing, and with some operation funds, we would be able to allow them to lease another building to separate people, not pay for hotel and motel fees, which is expensive, and not burden them with all the extra operation costs that they would entail. And then conversations just recently, this is exciting, the Topeka Rescue Mission has tentatively agreed to accept some federal funds from us for operations related to COVID. They have numerous, after talking to Barry Feeker, expenses related to COVID with staff training, using the Children's Palace for more shelter, all kinds of different activities that are happening. And so those are things that we're looking at now. And so if anybody has any input on that, I will take that, or you can ponder over it and get back with me by email, but sooner rather than later on that particular part. So any questions?
I'm sorry, one more question. In the past, we've always received like a list of the consolidated action plan, and you know, like X amount goes to here, X amount goes to here. How much do you think you would move, you know, from category A to category B or whatever, when we've sat down and worked? Are we going to get that budget on that piece of paper that way this time around? Since it's supposed to be 2021 through 2025, or is that something that we're not going to have access to this time?
So this is regarding the 2019 substantial amendment. So this is 1 year you know, 2 years has been, but 1 year, it's not our 5 year, like the first part of the presentation.
Okay.
This, yeah, so I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear. This particular part is how are we spending our CARES Act funding, and we have to have that polished out quickly. So we are working very hard with all of those entities to try to figure out what their needs are based off of HUD guidance and how we can help in certain ways, and is it the best for the community. And so we don't have a completely outlined budget yet, because I'm waiting for them to present with the activities, so then I can share that with you guys and others. But that should be coming out shortly, and that will probably come out about the same time as our 5-day comment period before we take it to council. And so you guys will be the first. As soon as it's completed, it will immediately get sent to LaToya to send out to you guys.
Corey?
Yes.
I was just curious, with the YW,
mm-hmm.
First of all, I think that's great. I've tried to assist people that have been in really bad situations. And I know that when they contacted the Y probably, let's say, oh, not quite 60 days ago, right during the middle of the virus, they weren't able to get any type of assistance or shelter. And they ended up over at the rescue mission by the grace of God. So mm-hmm. I was curious, when we say, you know, we can go ahead and assist with this, what do they have a facility in mind? Do we know how many beds it's, you know, how many people will be housed? How many people are going to be helped here?
Yeah, Margo, those are questions that we are working on right now. Okay. So you guys are, this is the high level view that you're receiving today. And we are really trying to nail down what we can do. We're looking at buildings. We're looking at how many people can we get in those buildings. If we give you this much money, how many people is that going to assist? Those are things we're working on right now. And we're going to work very quickly to get those answers, because the ESG money in particular, to prevent people from getting homeless and to help people from who are homeless getting back into housing, we need to get those dollars out. And I can't do that without putting this whole substantial amendment together. So we are working. The substantial amendment doesn't have to be quite that specific. We can work some of those details out after it's approved by HUD, which takes a little time as well. And while that's being approved, we can work on those details. But those are the exact questions that I'm asking of them. It's difficult right now because we're moving so quickly. But you're right. Those are the exact questions that I want to know. I do know that their current facility does not allow for social distancing. They literally have two people, I believe is what they told me, that are able to stay in there and be socially distant.
Well, I appreciate that, because I will tell you, I was, you know, it's upsetting, the situation. And, you know, I help the person call, and when someone is, you're trying to evade being beat, and you're told to shelter in place, I don't need to say anymore. That's difficult. And, you know, this, one of the individuals, they went ahead and, I mean, they ran and, you know, came across me. And so I did everything I could. And again, I was very thankful that the rescue mission and the police department, because that's who came out and assisted, this young lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to add that, because it's real. It does happen. You know, I'm walking and minding my own business and it occurred. So.
Right.
Thank you.
That's great. I'm glad you agree with that. I also agree. One of the things that you can use ESG funds for in the meantime is hotel vouchers for people in emergency shelter. So we can't use it for COVID patients with ESG. So again, the regulations don't talk to each other very well, But for ESG, if they're homeless and in that emergency situation, we can pay for motel hotel vouchers. So while we're waiting on the YWCA to find a building and all that stuff, we can be putting people up into hotel motels and using the ESG funds for that purpose. And so that's exciting to know. I know they've done a little bit of that over the last couple of months, but they didn't have the funds to do it for everybody that needed it. And so with these funds, that would be available.
Corey, I'm glad you said that to me, because the other situation was to be with someone homeless. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't cured necessarily. And I understand. I think it would have been better if the person, you know, I'm really sorry, but we don't have the funding. Here's an alternative. And I realize, you know, what we're experiencing is something new. And the reality is we're not all prepared. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
I'll save LaToya the trouble. It looks like Susan's trying to ask a question in the chat again. Is underserved areas the same as those with no insurance? Do they have to have symptoms before testing, or can we allow testing without other symptoms? How do we get information to our neighborhoods, small businesses for emergency loans, and is there a criteria to be met such as a repayment timeline? Well, we'll start with those, I guess, on the chat.
Okay, I'm not very fast writing down.
it's a very long message.
Okay.
Starting with, is underserved areas the same as those with no insurance? And do they have to have symptoms before testing, or can testing be allowed without other symptoms?
Okay, so underserved areas would include those areas where there's a high percentage of people with no insurance. That's a definite. As far as testing for people with no symptoms, I don't know that answer, and I will get back with you with the other documents that I will be sending through LaToya.
She goes on to ask, how do we get information to our neighborhood small businesses for emergency loans, and is there a criteria that has to be met, such as a repayment timeline?
So the tentative policy for the small business grants is in the process, so I don't have those answers quite yet. Once that policy is made, you guys are always the first people to know. Even before we even get it on the website, it is being sent to the Community Engagement Division to send out to you. So pretty much we will try to get everybody on the same page at the same time with the criteria for that, if that answers that question.
From Susan again, does each business need to apply for the emergency funds? Is there some kind of cap based on some criteria that businesses can receive?
Yes, so the small business grants will be a maxed out at $20,000, and each business would need to apply separately.
And where are all the emergency centers located? Does this also include assistance with higher call volumes for those contemplating suicide?
Emergency centers, I'm sorry, can you clarify what you mean by that?
I'll give Susan a minute to do that, because I'm still reading her message in the chat.
I appreciate it.
Her last question looks like, would it be able to use any Washburn dorm rooms to house people due to students not being in full capacity? So would the dorm rooms present an option for relief?
So the only way we could do that, the CDBG, you would not. The only way to use the CDBG CV funds would be to rehabilitate, acquire, reconstruct something, and not use for operations. With emergency solutions grant, the only way to use that money is if the people were homeless. We could only pay for the homeless services, and somebody would have to manage the operations of that. So that that is a barrier for that to happen, but it's a great point.
Still waiting on clarification on the emergency center's located question.
Okay.
Her second question to that part was, does this funding include helping with assistance for higher call volumes of contemplating suicide?
It does not, but that is a question I can ask Shawnee County if maybe we can incorporate that into the plans. If that suicide, it all has to relate to COVID, so if that suicide ideation is coming from a COVID-related incident, can we use some of those funds to help with that? So I will check on that as well.
So for clarification, Susan responded that YMCA is emergency center for domestic abuse. Are there other places such as we have flood and tornado, and also do we have that also have to be concerned with crowds? Lost your job, can't pay your rent, etc. Some maybe resources feeding into the thoughts of suicide.
Again, I'll have to check on the suicide situation and whether that's eligible under the COVID activities. I'll check on that and report back.
Okay. I think that covers her questions. Susan had quite a few of them.
Any other questions? And again, feel free, email me after this. You might think of something later. I'm very open to comments and questions and like the feedback.
So the some of the emergency loans and resources for small businesses. Mm-hmm. Now, is that outside of the SBA and what the SBA has done with like the PPP, and they had an initial grant, I believe you could apply for $10,000, and then they did the PPP, and now they've opened it up to take a 3.75% loan that's on a 30-year note, but you don't have to make a payment for a year. This is outside of all that, correct?
James, absolutely. One of the requirements for certain is that they cannot have received any loan or grant from any other source during this pandemic. So that will be part of the application process and vetting.
Okay, so this is for those who either did not get on board with the SBA and the PPP or did not qualify at the time.
Yes. From my understanding from Greater Topeka Partnership, been working with them on this and trying to learn what the underserved population is for businesses, is that there were many people that didn't qualify for those grants for whatever reason, I don't know. But this will certainly, and actually it's a regulation, will not be allowed to be for businesses who have received any of those funds.
One more quick question on that one. So say you are involved in multiple businesses, okay? For instance, say someone owns like a construction company, but then they also have an LLC for like some of their rental properties and stuff, because they try to keep that separate. Mm-hmm. So if you get PPP money for the construction company, would this money be something that you could apply for under your another LLC? Or is it again one of those things where it's like, okay, this company received money, your name's on it, so you are not eligible for this money over here?
We would limit this to a one-time opportunity for the owner of the LLC or the owner of the company. So we would be looking at all of that and determining. These are such limited funds. It sounds like a lot of money, but once you start dishing out $20,000, it doesn't go very far. We're really looking at maybe 40 businesses benefiting from that, if we go that route. So we have to be very specific in providing that guidance.
Donna Ray asked in the chat, has any thought been given to rehabbing some vacant buildings? Will there be a line item for the hospital?
So after meeting with emergency management, the CDBG funds are the funds that you can use to rehab a building. There's no operating funds with that. For the COVID patient, and it also has to be a building used for COVID patients. We are not hearing a need for a building exclusively for COVID patients at this time.
And Susan asked, does the majority of the employees, so referring to the small business loans or grants, do the majority of the employees have to be low income?
51%, yes. Any other questions? I really thank you all for your input and hope to get a few emails after you get to time to think this over. And we will be back with you very quickly on the 2019 substantial amendment and what we're looking like there. So expect that rather quickly, as soon as we get some information back from the agencies. And then the five-year con plan, that's in development, and we have a little bit of time for that, so we'll have a lot more time to provide feedback on that after this call. So.
Real quick, Corey, one last one from Susan. It looks like some businesses are just starting or had to delay their opening. Are they eligible for loans too?
They had to be open before March 13th.
So Corey, we will make sure to gather all the questions and make sure that they are included in the information that we send out to the CEC members and the NA leaders and request for additional questions and provide. Corey, because you're hosting now, but Mr. Chair, I need to answer the question, provide information for development services, the permit and license inspection information, and then talk for about special program. So the phone number for the permits division is 368-3704, and for licensing inspections it's 368-3905, and we'll ask which way to do that in the email as well.
I'm sorry, Monique, you kind of cut out on my end. I am sorry. Is there any way you could type that in the chat or something?
I'm sorry. Actually, if you're not speaking, can you put yourself on mute? Because it cuts into when someone else is talking.
Thanks, Latoya. Yes, we'll have Latoya put that into the chat, and also she'll send it out so everyone has that information when we send this recap to all of the NIA and CAC members. So you'll be receiving an email sometime tomorrow that will show the link to this recorded Zoom meeting. So all of the members who weren't able to participate will have that access to be able to listen to it as well. And as we receive the supporting documents from Corey, we will include those in addition to that as well. We will also be providing a Zoom invitation, and it will be titled the Special CAC Empowerment Restructuring Program Meeting. It is scheduled for next Tuesday evening from 6 to 8. If it only takes 30 minutes, we'll be finished in 30 minutes, but we don't want to rush our NIA and CAC leaders. We want you to be able to have an in-depth conversation. We will be sending out in that invitation the proposed new programming that LaToya and I came up with in lieu of the empowerment program. And so I'm going to give you some basic numbers. We have been directed that the neighborhood programs now, the minimum amount of money that will be provided would be $45,000, and the maximum amount would be $60,000. So currently the empowerment is at $137,000, and the difference will be provided for the weatherization program. There's no way around it. This has been the directive that has been given to us by the city manager, and so we will go forward with it. But we have created three new potential programs that will be able to provide the NIAs with some community building opportunities. What we want to be able to do is to give you the menu of these programs, allow you to look at those. Corey will vet them to ensure that we are in compliance under an eligible activity type. And then we will allow you to vote on, yes, would you like to be able to implement these programs? We will give you dollar amounts, and then you can determine which programs you'd like to be able to have approved and at what dollar amount. As Corey indicated, we have to do this swiftly, and we don't have a lot of time. So we apologize for the short notice of the meeting, but we wanted to make sure that you were invited to the table, that you were informed of these programs, and that you were making a decision of which programs would be implemented. So you will have two separate emails from LaToya, and one will be specific to this. And again, as I told you, it will be a draft form. We'll provide you with these three programs. There is a fourth program that we've created. It's called Community Leadership Academy, but we are going to utilize any of the funding that's left over at the end of the year from Neighborhood Services instead of taking away from the other money that has been directed for us to use for neighborhood programs, and so that won't eat into that. So we will provide you with that information at the meeting next week. We ask that you please have all of your questions. If you have questions prior to the meeting, please send them to us. We can make sure that they're addressed during that meeting as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Does anyone else have any other questions, comments, or concerns? Okay, then I'll ask again. Will we receive for the 2021 through 2025 the budget and the breakdown like we've received in the past? And can that be emailed to us so then that way we can have we can have the same tools that we've had in the past to be able to look at that budget and that plan?
Yes, as soon as it is put together with some comments, then we'll send it to you first, and then you can certainly look at that like you normally do.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
So with that, does anybody else have any questions at all? Anyone? All right. I would like to move to take a vote to end the meeting.
I second.
All right. All in favor, say aye, or put a thumbs up on the keyboard. I guess I don't know how we're going to do that. Aye. All opposed, say nay. I'm not seeing or hearing a nay. Can I get somebody to second that for me?
I second it.
All right, we're done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good day.